Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is Cestine Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, Cestine Duckworth.
Welcome, everyone, and I'm glad to have you here today. Thank you. Our guest today is Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum, and we're going to be talking about his book, Our African Unconscious. It's going to be interesting. So the fossil records do confirm that humanity originated in Africa, yet somehow we have overlooked that Africa is also at the root of all that makes us human, our spirituality, civilization, the arts, sciences, philosophy, and our conscious and unconscious mind. So today I'm happy to have Dr. Bynum here. He's the author of several books and poetry. He's the winner of the National Naomi Long Magic Poetry Prize for Chronicles of the Pig and Other Delusions. He is a clinical psychologist, author of several books in psychology, including The Dream Life of Families, Dark Light Consciousness, and The Roots of Transcendence. He is a recipient of the Abraham H. Maslow Award from the American Psychological Association, and he lives in Amherst, Massachusetts. So he's here today to talk to us about his book and his thoughts. So I'm happy to have him here today. How are you today, Dr. Bynum?
I'm pretty good, all things considered. How about you?
Oh, great, great, beautiful day. coming to the dark now, but everybody in Arizona right. Gets happy around this time because it's all cool.
Yes. Well, we're here tonight to talk about a lot of things and a lot of things that began under warmer skies.
Yes, most definitely. And I'm really excited to have you on today because I'm like, oh, here's somebody that is doing what I love. I think I told you I was going to do medical anthropology in school, and I got when I was in my class, my instructor kept giving me a lot of articles on human genetics and anthropology and the origin of man, and I got so caught up in that. It was just, you know, everything I could want more. Yeah, it really is. But, you know, I also had an uncle. Yeah, because my uncle was, he was feeding me other books of some of the other people you've mentioned in your book. He was feeding me some of that too. So I'm really interested in how you, you know, were inspired to do this book. I know you've done a lot of books, but this one is really, I think what's really interesting for on this book was that, you know, we know about the origin of man, but to start correlating a lot of the, what you've done is correlated a lot of time with the moving out of the species from Africa and religion. And I think it's really fascinating what you're writing about. So what inspired you to write this book?
Well, as you know, I'm primarily by training a clinical psychologist. So I see people in therapy. I do psychosomatic medicine, hypnosis, family therapy. And so I'm looking in this direction. And just like you, I'm fascinated by what I see. And then I just simply followed the evidence. And it was quite clear that, you know, all the anthropologists agree, there's no disagreement, that our ancient ancestors of, you know, millions of years ago developed in Africa. But not only that, but our ancestors, as they began to whittle themselves down into more groups, all also developed in Africa. And then, roughly a million years or so ago, we started leaving the eastern part of Africa and exploring other parts of Africa. And then varying branches of us started leaving Africa itself roughly a million years or so. Well, what's interesting is that our particular species, because there were a lot of different kinds of hominid or human-like creatures running around at that time.
Right.
But our species, Homo sapiens sapiens, we're the ones, we're their progeny. They're our ancestors. And they developed about 200,000 years ago. And then they eventually left Africa and populated the rest of the world. And so all those other variations of us, the Cro-Magnon and, Neanderthals and all the other creatures cousins all kind of like died out. And only us, Homo sapiens sapiens, were the ones who finally survived. And then we moved out of Africa up into over into the eastern part of the world, through the Middle East, and over into India and Australia, and the other branch moved into Europe. And we were pretty much looking the same until about 30,000 or so, 25,000-30,000 years ago. And then we began to start looking different on the surface only. Only on the surface.
Right.
But deep down, we remain the same creature, the same being. And what I try to emphasize in our African unconscious, which is what the anthropologists don't emphasize as much, is that underneath all of that, we developed our minds and our brains during this time. So underneath all of the surface differences, anthropologists recognize that there's an African genesis there underneath all of that. Well, I try to emphasize that our psyche, our very way of thinking, our consciousness itself also developed in Africa, and that spread with us as we went to all these different places. So we know today that, you know, anthropologically speaking, whether you develop, whether we're born and raised in India or Russia or Japan or South America, you all belong to the same species. Well, I'm trying to emphasize that deep down in that primordial mind, deep, deep down, the unconscious, we all have that same African-rooted template as a psychic and a psychological and a spiritual being. And that's what the different chapters try to sort of elucidate as we move, because it's the origin not only of our way to think about the world that led to science, but also our way of thinking about the world that led to our different spiritual and religious developments. Because they all can be traced back to that that course time?
Well, it was interesting. I was reading the first part in the first part of the book about dreams time, and it was really interesting to read about that because then I was like, oh, okay, because then I started thinking about all the cultures that had some aspect of that within their culture. And it was just like, I was like, okay, this is really, in fact, when I was reading the book, I told my daughter, I was like, okay, you got to read this book when I get through with it, because we've had quite a few conversations lately about the origin of man and about religion as well. And and it was kind of funny. I said to her the other day, I said, you know, I said, when you hear people talking and you look at people. Now, my uncle used to say, he would look at people and he would say, they're from this tribe. He never looked at people for race or anything like that. He said, they're from this tribe or they're from that tribe.
Right.
Which I used to think was really kind of cool when he, you know, would do that. So when you're talking about dreams time and you're talking about, you know, how, when I was reading about how other tribes have, you know, have, use the same religion. Even here in America, when you think about the Native Americans, some aspect of that is in, you know, their religion and what they believe and what they practice. So, so it was really interesting to kind of watch, to see the religions. Now, one of the things is I want to ask you about is the Austrophoid. Lloyd, am I saying that right?
Yeah,
right. So, I understand that is that kind of, are they kind of the precursors to the tribes that are in Australia?
Yes,
because they're
the branch,
kind of the they're considered the oldest. All right.
Yeah, that branch of Homo sapiens crossed over into Australia probably from India. Because back in those times, the water levels were much lower, so it was easier to go by a small boat from island to island to island, and so that's how they eventually got there, probably around 60,000 years ago. And they populated that island, continent really, and that's where they developed. And but their remote cousins went up into Russia, and others went up into the northern parts of Europe. And again, the surface changes are adaptations to environmental demands, you know. But those are all surface. But deep down, it's the same nervous system, the same structure of the heart. And so it's no surprise that the deep core religious traditions in all branches of our species are the same, particularly in the spiritual traditions. That's why the book was called Our African Unconscious, meaning all of us, African Unconscious, the Black origins of mysticism and psychology, because all of our mystical traditions, even the ones practiced today, you can trace them back structurally to not only the same place, but also their way of understanding and seeing and experiencing the universe is very, very, very much the same. So you can be a follower of different Islamic religions, or you can be a mystical follower of Christianity or Judaism or Hinduism. Underneath it is still the same, recognition of that there's a primordial energy at the base of all, base of the spine of human beings. And the nature of the religion is to bring it to the top of the skull, bring it to the top of the brain. And you see that no matter what. You can go to South America, you can go to Peru, you can go to the Native Indigenous American people and see the same sort of thing as you see in ancient Kemetic Egypt. And even including Japan. So because our nervous systems, literally our brains and our nervous systems, are all the same, there's no difference.
Right.
And we can be taller or shorter, We can have differences in skin tone on the surface, but underneath of it, our brains and nervous systems are the same, and we develop the same way in the embryo. So that is all traced back to our common African ancestral origin of millions of years ago that reached its final contemporary expression about 200,000 years ago with the rise of Homo sapiens sapiens, thinking man.
Okay. So how can we truly understand our shared consciousness and identity as a species? It's interesting how I always say that, you know, some cultures get it. And when I say get it, I mean I'll give you an example. When my aunt was a speech therapist, and she used to say that a lot of the African-American inflections and that comes from here, like some of it we got from the Irish people, and some of what we got, you know, and she would say, and for me growing up, it's always been interesting. So even now today, when I look at people, you know, I'm looking at them and I'm listening to them and I'm like, okay. So it's still very interesting too. So how can we really understand that? Because it's interesting to watch today. We have so many divisions and, you know, like I tell my daughter, I say, well, you know, if I say you really want to look at it, I said all of us came from the same place. So, so how do you,
Well, for me, there are two very direct ways of realizing that. One is simply to follow the scientific data, and that includes not only the data about our blood types, which are all the same. There are only four different basic types of blood types that all human beings share. Our anatomical structure, what anthropologists have dug up basically based on the bones and those fragments. And so there's all of that body of rigorously researched scientific evidence. The other great way is to look at the basics message of all the great religions without exceptions. All the great religions without exceptions. What do they say? They say we are all brothers and sisters. Every great spiritual teacher, no exception. The great Jesus, the Christ, the Buddha, Krishna, Muhammad, Zoroaster, all of them say the same thing. The human family is one family. And if you search your heart and you search your soul through prayer and meditation, you can come upon the same reality as you come upon if you study the great sciences, the physical sciences. So there are two great ways of recognizing that primal and primary truth. And I think we really need to do that because, you know, we're beset with all kinds of horrific changes going on right now and across the earth. I mean, we have a climate ecological crisis that it can no longer be denied. And it's not as if one country can close its borders and say, well, you know, keep everybody out. We're going to handle it ourselves. No. Ecology doesn't recognize borders. It doesn't.
That's true.
We have waves of people coming across our borders on every continent because of not only climate change, but wars. So we have mass migrations of different ethnic groups. We have economic issues that are multinational. And so we have to recognize our basic unity. Otherwise, we're not going to survive. You know, we're living in a really critical time right now for our species. For the first time that we know about, anyway, for the first time in our history as a species of 200,000 years, we've actually started taking serious steps off the planet. The age of government scientific exploration is still going on, but that's being supplanted by actual the commercial exploration of space. I mean, think back to the beginning of the last century. You know, there was experimentation with cars and automobiles, and the people were tinkering their garages and so forth. And then eventually the formulas were worked out, and the Wright brothers learned how to fly, and Henry Ford learned how to get a car mass-produced. Well, look how far we've come since that time. We now have space. We now have automobiles that drive on light. I mean, we're at the very beginning of that with our stepping off the planet. And so we need to have our act together because God knows what we're going to find when we get out there. And if our own house is in disorder, we may not be in the best position to deal with what we're going to meet. So really, accepting each other with our differences, we don't have to all feel the same way, but we have to recognize that your survival and my survival depend on each other. And
right.
so that's another reason that we have to get beyond this. The tax of all these ethnic wars and petty rivalries, that it's a pretty high tax to pay. And we don't have forever to keep paying these taxes. So, you know, all of you are listening out there, you turn on the TV, what do you hear about? Look at all the massive technological changes the climatic changes. We have to work together or else we won't make it. It's that simple.
Well, very true. I think that one of the things you said was as far as getting people to understand our shared consciousness and who we are as a people and our identity is going to be coming to terms with it. I think so many people right now, and this is just my opinion, you can tell me what you think, but I think that so many people now that a lot of the anger is really based on confusion. Confusion is based on ignorance. When you think about it, I see some people that are actually coming out of that and looking at other people and saying, wait a minute, you know, they're really not so different, you know.
That's
especially
right.
especially during COVID. I know in my community, it was kind of interesting what was interesting is that we all get along really well on our social media app, okay, it's the Nextdoor app. We are the same. We help each other the same. Someone's, you know, I tell you, I've never seen so many people really help people in the community. But when we walk down the street, you know, if I say hi, you may not speak to me because you see the outside of me as being, you know, a black woman, which is so weird, you know, is that just your look can change someone's opinion, whereas being behind the thing, it's like, you know, they forget who you are as a person.
They forget what your service looks like.
I think that's good.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know,
Well,
that's true, as you're pointing that out. It's sort of a metaphor, when we're not looking at the surface and we're looking underneath and feeling underneath, we recognize that we have a commonality. And that commonality is actually what is going to save us, a recognition of that, of necessity.
Of
necessity. Because it's not scientifically an issue anymore. Science and medicine have clearly indicated that the nature of our species, our origins, and our deep consciousness is all the same. Mm-hmm. We have the same nervous systems. We all dream the same way. You know, we all reproduce the same way. We all eat the same way. And we all die the same way. And we all can speak.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing that you can take an infant from a small group in the Amazon, fly them to Russia, have them grow up, and they will learn to speak Russian perfectly.
Right.
Someone from Japan, you can take to South Africa. They grow up there, and they will speak perfectly one of the many Bantu languages. Perfectly.
Right.
That's because our nervous system is the same, our audio system is the same, our tongue is the same, and even though there are about 6,500 different languages on the earth right now, all of them spring from a common language, a mother tongue.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yes. Yes.
So, why do you think, Well, why do you think millions of people that can sense this and can sense where we're going seem to they're not going into this quietly. They're going into it, see that we're becoming more of a melting pot. It's like they're really fighting this.
Well, a lot of us identify ourselves with our surface appearance, and we are nervous that there may not be anything deeper than us on the surface. Mm-hmm. And if that surface disappears, what are we? And if we look deeper, if we take our different religions really seriously, I mean really seriously, that fear fades away. That fear fades away. It's like someone who can see themselves during the day in the bathroom, in the mirror, in the living room, in the mirror. All the lights go out, and they wonder, because they're not seeing their physical self in the mirror, do they still really exist? Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. You don't have to see your surface reflection to know that you really are there. Well, our blood systems, seriologically, are the same. Our nervous system, the way the brain operates, the structure of it is the same. Our anatomical history is the same. Our embryological history in our mother's womb developing is the same. And we can all speak the same language regardless of where we come from. So the surface is important, but it's like the surface wave from the ocean. It's interesting and important, but deep down we share.
Mm-hmm. So the milestones in human evolution, they were discovered. So, and when I say milestones, how Homo sapiens discovered their soul and burying their dead.
Yeah,
and
they did.
Discovered agriculture, right? So
yeah.
Are those things, when they say discovered, are they kind of wired into us, or how do we
I believe
that?
I think they are wired into us. Why do I say that?
Mm-hmm.
Other Homo sapiens, not us, we're Homo sapiens sapiens, but our other cousins,
mm-hmm. Right.
Such as Neanderthal and the Heidelberg man, and there are many, many, mm-hmm. many others. They also used to bury their dead, and
mm-hmm.
they would bury them usually in the fetal positions and so forth. And so other forms of us, of Homo sapiens, had a sense of some kind of spirit or energy or form or something unseen that manifested itself through us. And that is the basis of spirituality. And so us species, Homo sapiens sapiens, also came up with the same thing. So I don't think it's an accident that we sort of like generated that in our minds. No, we kind of like discovered it. Like we discovered, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, when we were in the river mm-hmm. valleys, you know, that seeds that we threw away last year germinated. They came out of the ground, and the same thing kind of like grew that we used to eat there. And so we kind of
mm-hmm.
discovered, oh, huh, we discovered agriculture, and then we started mimicking it. It's the same way with our great deep, deep primordial spiritual traditions. And it comes out of our common inheritance as a species of on this planet, the great intelligent
mm-hmm.
species on this planet. And it's a discovery that we all make. So religion and spirituality are discovered by man. We didn't create it. It wasn't done in the laboratory. It was an observation about the nature of how the process worked.
Mm-hmm.
Our intelligence
mm-hmm.
discovered it. We didn't create it. Just like the wind and the waves, tide, gravity, we didn't create those. We discovered them.
Mm-hmm. Kind of interesting. When we're talking about mysticism, the black origins of mysticism, and
yeah.
I did get to where we were talking about, where you were starting to talk about some of the mysticism that's in Africa. And what's kind of interesting is that I've talked to individuals that believe, well, there was only this one religion, what is usually voodoo, that came from Africa. And I'm like, no, there's more religions that came out of Africa.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It's much, much more. I think the emphasis for most people has been on voodoo. But voodoo is not the only one, and it's not the only.
Not by a long shot. Not by a
right,
long shot.
Right.
No.
Right.
Because they forget
the mysticism that's even part of Christianity.
That's right. When Christianity was born, the roots, the ideas, the basic ideas of Christianity
mm-hmm.
were also nurtured in ancient Egypt for thousands of years
mm-hmm.
before the great avatar and liberator, Jesus the Christ, showed up on the scene in Judea. And even then, after 12 years, in the early days, right after he was born and Herod heard about it, that, you know, a new king was born, his family hightailed it out of Israel, Judea, and they went to Egypt. And they stayed
mm-hmm.
there until he was 12 years old. And Herod's time was gone, and then Jesus came back. And so he studied in Egypt. And then he was on the trade routes with Nicodemus. And he studied in Egypt, and he studied on the trade routes all the way over into India. And then he shows back up
mm-hmm.
into Palestine, and when he's around 32 and begins his ministry. And that only lasted about 3 years. But my point is that he also studied in Africa. And many of the basic ideas about Holy Family, death, resurrection, atonement, judgment, all of those came out of the ancient mystery schools of Egypt that were active at least 5,000 years, 5,000 years before Christ in written form, in written form. So our great spiritual heroes from time to time who come amongst us, they sort of like re-deliver the same message. We need to hear it periodically in revived form from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that it's always interesting when I talk to individuals from Africa, and we talk about different countries in Africa. When my aunt was doing our genealogy, and it's always interesting it's always interesting because I think people have the idea that only Egypt was a civilization. When no, that's not true. There were a lot of civilizations in Africa that were very cultural, art, sciences. And I was really surprised. I saw the recent documentary High on the Hog, and it was really interesting because I didn't know that Africans had brought rice to America. And so it was just really interesting to learn those things because they had it was one of the men, I believe he was in South Carolina, said their grandfather had a rice plantation, but once a lot of the Africans left and were freed, they could not sustain the plantation because they didn't know how to do the rice. They didn't know how to grow the rice.
Right.
And I thought that was very interesting there. Right. I thought that was really interesting. So I wonder, is it just not wanting to know that there's other civilizations more advanced than us that could be part of the fear?
I don't know. I suspect it, but I don't know. We do know
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
the civilizations before Kemetic Egypt were ancient Nubia, and that was a civilization,
mm-hmm.
highly articulated civilization, where the pyramids actually began, smaller pyramids, but they began in Nubia,
mm-hmm.
and they
mm-hmm.
descended down the Nile, and then the confluence of the peoples of the western parts of the Sahara that was drying up at that time, and those coming down from the northern mountains of Ethiopia met, mingled along the Nile. And that is how that great civilization, the Egyptian-Nubian civilization, really got generated.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that was around for sure at least 6,000 years before Christ, before the Common Era. But archaeological evidence from the pyramids and the Sphinx, the great lion-headed figure with the body of a lion and the face and the head of a man, is carved probably around 10,500 years before Christ. Why do we say that? because the Sphinx, again, with the body of a lion and the head of a man, mm-hmm. is looking directly, positioned directly into the vernal equinox, the spring equinox, mm-hmm. looking into the zodiac at the era of Leo the Lion in 10,500 B.C. That's no accident. It happened again in 2500 B.C. during the age of the Pyramid Age. But, you know, the Sphinx at the bottom of it has water erosion marks. That didn't happen in a dry Sahara. That happened when the Sahara was lush with rivers. And we now have satellite data to show that the whole era was covered with rivers and lakes and everything else. And in many of the caves, there are carvings of animals that used to be there, that hippos and alligators and so on, and we found their remains. So the Sahara mm-hmm. was once a very rich, lush area, and that is when the mm-hmm. Sphinx was carved 10,500 years before Christ. So that civilization fell at the end of the last ice age, and we went in, that area went into decline for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, and then began the slow climb back to civilization around 5 to 6,000 years BCE before Christ, before the Common Era. And then historical Egypt that we recognize by the Egyptologists kind of popped up supposedly around 3,200 years before Christ. But the ancient Kemetic Egyptians, their own history, written in stone, by the way, they chronicle mm-hmm. their own history from, they call it Zep-Tepi, or the splendid time of the first time. And I went into great detail in our African Unconscious to document that with evidence, archaeological evidence, anthropological evidence, because we as a species have had many rises and many falls, many rises and many mm-hmm. falls. And we can see that in the jungles of the Amazons, civilizations have been there and then been lost. We see it in India where civilizations have come and gone. We see it in Africa. So we as a species have had many rises.
Well, what do you think were the causes of the tribes disappearing and just, you know, leaving?
Many factors, including climate changes. You know, some climate changes mm-hmm. came very fast. You know, there are cities along the Nile in Egypt that were there for thousands of years, and then the course of the built on the side of the Nile. Then the course of the Nile changed. The course mm-hmm. of the Nile River changed, and it inundated those cities over many years. And so those cities were eventually covered in mud, and they disappeared.
And yeah, something. Mm-hmm, one of the things looking at climate change and looking how the weather is changing. I think maybe a few years ago, we're starting to realize how powerful that climate change is, looking at glaciers that are melting really fast, looking at, things is when they had the tsunami in Indonesia, I think the thing that was really, was that it actually moved the island. And I think that for me, that was like, oh my God, that's really huge. But now we're seeing more than that. We're seeing volcanoes that are just exploding.
Right.
We're seeing changing. And when you say changing the landscape, definitely. Now, we used to think, growing up in California, we used to think when they had the mudslides, you know, why do you build your house up there? Because every year when we have these bad rains, we have mudslides. You know, it literally just changes the whole, you know, landscape.
It does.
So
it does.
I think people can see now that, you know, they can see that this whole climate change is really no joke, and not even just climate change. I think I read not too long ago about how viruses and bacteria are coming to life that were frozen in the glaciers.
That's right.
So, what that impact is going to have on us as well.
We don't know yet, but we know it's probably not good. And
but
look at the everyday news. I mean, a few months ago, because of the rains brought about by climate change, right here in this part of the country, in New England and the Mid-Atlantic states, we had the subways in New York City flooded.
Right.
And
right.
I don't mean with a little
yep.
rain. I don't mean with a little
That's
rain.
Right.
I mean flooded, flooded.
Right,
impassable, impassible. And with the water tables rising, what do you think is going to happen to all that expensive landscape on the shores of Florida?
Very, yes.
Right.
Well, yeah, you
it's
exactly.
Going. Look at Galveston.
Well, you know, when we have our monsoons here in Arizona, they get a little bit worse every year. They come a little bit sooner
yeah.
every year.
Yes, they do.
And we
yeah.
had a lot of rain. We had more rain this year in monsoons than we ever had before. And from the result of the rain, we've had more of these little critters that come in the summertime than we ever. I mean, they said it's basically because of the hot weather, the rain, that we just, termites are going crazy. Exterminators are going crazy with termites, you know, scorpions. We have, in fact, because of the growth and all of that, we have wild animals that essentially don't come around humans that are actually in our neighborhoods now.
Yep, that's true.
Because there's
that's
no food
true.
Out where they're, yeah, there's no
there's
food in
no
their own.
Food, and they've got to
yeah.
find it. They've got to find
yeah.
it. I mean,
yeah.
one of the things that I was at pains to outline in our African unconscious was that whenever there's been a major new climate event that we as a species, Homo sapiens sapiens, have had to adapt to it. So in the past, when it was slower, we migrated to different parts of the planet, we adjusted to the environment. Those of us of our gene pool who went up into Europe, well, we had to adapt in order to live in that kind of climate. So our eyes went from brown to more like gradually blue, because blue sees better in foggy areas. Our bodies had to have more hair on the surface and get longer to retain body heat. And there have been findings. Cheddar Man is one example in England, where they discovered this man about 10,000 years ago. Well, for all intents and purposes, he looked very African, except his eyes were obviously had been blue. He was in the process of changing to adapt
changing.
To the climate.
Wow.
Those of us who went into other parts of the world, we adapted to that climate. So every time there's been a major climate change, we're a very adaptable species, which is why we're here. And we will adapt. So right now we have a major adaptation that's going to happen. But this time it seems to be happening much more quickly, much more quickly.
Yeah.
Of course, we're more scientifically advanced, so we'll be able to hopefully deal with it better. But there are massive changes afoot, and our species will just have to adapt or not. And I think we will. I think we will. You know, the ozone layer is being eaten away through climate change. We all know that because in the northern parts of the world and the southern parts of the world, i.e. Northern Europe and Australia and so forth, where the ozone layer is thinning and the ultraviolet radiation is coming through, those individuals with lighter skin are developing skin cancers, basal carcinomas, much more highly than other people who are more pigmented around the earth, simply because the sun is getting through ultraviolet radiation. They don't have the protective covering of melanin on their skin, and that is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
We as a species, something called Gloger's Law, that mammalian creatures in a warm and temperate climate have to have dark skin in order to protect them from the ultraviolet light of the sun. It's called Gloger's Law. It's an evolutionary principle. Well, that's how we started as a species. And then depending on where we went, we lost some of that along with other things that we developed simply because we needed to adapt to the circumstances that were going on. And, again, that's part of the reason that we survived. And out of all those different kinds of prototypes of us, experimental types, if you will, we're the ones that stood the test of time. And we've been around for 200,000 years in our present form. I want to emphasize to folks, our present form. We weren't as tall, that's right, but our brain case size, the same. Our capacity, the same. If you were somehow miraculously came across a human, a Homo sapien infant, somehow they got caught in some sort of strange time warp, but you mm-hmm. came across them, that child would be able to go to school, learn mathematics, and master quantum mechanics, or learn to fly a spaceship from 100,000 years
right.
ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
Which is really our present species.
Yeah.
Well, I also think that when I was studying human genetics, I thought it was just interesting how, you know, how the genetics turn themselves off as you're developing, how they turn on. I think the most fascinating one was that over one third of your, you know, one third of your genetics is just for your brain, you know,
right,
brain development.
Right.
And I was like,
that's
wow,
right.
that's really a lot. But as I'm learning more about the brain, it's just fascinating. But also, I often wonder, because when we were studying genetics, we were talking about how some diseases or some, let's take, for instance, sickle cell anemia, how some people that might have had the sickle cell anemia gene, not necessarily the disease, couldn't, you know, weren't susceptible to malaria. And there's
right.
a lot of stuff like that. So I'm always wondering what happens when science is saying that, oh, you know, we found this cure for sickle cell anemia, and you're like, okay, so what does that mean for, you know, those that are not susceptible to malaria because they have that? So I'm always looking
yeah,
at that.
We don't know.
And everyone that I've talked to that, you know, still works in human genetics, they say, well, you know, honestly, he said, we don't really know. He said, as much as we've done with genetics, we still don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know what the implications of that, of our changing things around is going to be. You know, a lot of times we think mm-hmm. that we're on the verge of a great advance because we've come up with a new chemical manipulation, but that can go down a bad path very quickly. I mean, right now we are experimenting with the human genome so that we can, you know, help fight certain kinds of diseases, which is wonderful, which is great. But
mm-hmm.
we don't.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that, given human nature, there are undoubtedly will be certain kinds of people and maybe governments that manipulate,
mm-hmm.
try to manipulate the gene pool in a certain way and create horrific problems. So we don't know. We have to be very careful about that. Even China, has made it illegal to do that because they can see how that could get out of hand real fast. So we're entering a brave new world here.
A brave new world, and that I think we should have a little bit more respect for. One of the things I really liked about your book, because it weaved in a lot, but it weaved it in such a way, just like you're saying, you talked about how the, you know, water was lower in some areas. You talked about, you know, the climate changing. Really was just really interesting how you weaved quantum mechanics. And so how long did it take you to write this book?
Well, the idea actually was rooted in my mind. In my third book, when I was talking about personality development and
mm-hmm.
as a psychologist, and its connection to certain kinds of psychological and spiritual and other phenomena associated with energy, and
mm-hmm.
I became aware that there's a fundamental unity behind all of that. And that's when I began to
mm-hmm.
thinking about that in reference to our origins as a species. And that is
mm-hmm.
what eventually led to the sort of the revelation, so to speak, to me, that if we're the same, certainly on the surface, and we're the same in our embryology, and we're the same in our anthropology, and we're the same in our genetics, and we're the same in our blood,
mm-hmm.
we're also the same in our minds. So I wrote a book on the dream life of families, in which I talked about how dreams in families occur and how dreams can sometimes be parallel in the same families. And it got to the idea of a collective mind, a collective conscious, sort of an unconscious, a family unconscious. And out of that, the natural step was a genetic unconscious. And that is the idea of our African unconscious, a genetic unconscious. You know, this idea of an unconscious mind is not a new idea. I mean, we think that, you know, Sigmund Freud discovered the unconscious in the 19th century, late 18th century, 19th century. It's not true. The ancient Kemetic Egyptians knew about the unconscious. They even had a name for it. They called it the primordial, primeval waters of Nun and the Amenta, the all-black underworld of forces and forms out of which the surface world emerged. And they used it in surgery. They used hypnosis. They used pain control. They were very advanced because, you know, they studied the human anatomy because of the science of mummification out of their religious beliefs.
Right.
So they knew about the meninges of the brain. They knew about the structure of the nervous system in many ways. In fact, a lot of their information about medicine and science was not surpassed until the mid-18th century in Europe. They were very far out. Yes, they were very far, very advanced. And so this idea of a collective unconscious, one psychiatrist, Jung's notion of it, was a collective unconscious. And Freud's idea, he called it the racial unconscious, you know? Well, I've simply called it what it is, which is the African unconscious, because neither Freud nor Jung could quite get to that. They were men of their time, you know. I can understand that. Freud wasn't going to say that the origin of all of the human mind was an African thing. I mean, come on. Even a 19th century European man. The same with Jung. Although Jung came about as close to it as possible. He was, in one of his books, Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, I believe it was, he recalls traveling through Africa. I believe it was Uganda, and he's looking out the window from the train, and he sees this African kid sitting on the side of a mountaintop, looking like he was playing an instrument of one kind. And Jung was just struck by that, and he said to himself, "That's me. I know that that's me deep down." He saw it, and he said so. But he couldn't go all the way because he couldn't submerge, he couldn't look beyond his European surface ancestry to the deeper ancestry, totally embrace it. We're at a different time now, and there are millions and millions and millions of non-black on the surface people who intuitively know that. You can't get out of high school these days, and certainly not out of college, without recognizing that all human beings come out of Africa.
True.
And so it's just a matter of a little extrapolation. And you intuitively kind of know that. You intuitively kind of know that. And people have let me know that. And it's kind of like they don't quite know what to do with it, but they kind of know it's true. They just, it's unsettling to the surface sense of identity, you know?
Especially, you know, I've seen people, get their little DNA kits done and they're, you know, and they're like, oh, wow. In fact, I know a guy, he's like, oh, wow, I have 2% sub-Saharan African. I'm like, yeah, all of us do. You know, it was amazing to him, you know, because he's white and he's like, wow, you know, and I'm like, but it's kind of like, but you still don't get it yet. You're getting close, but you still don't get it, you know.
Right. Well,
we're all from the same place.
Major leap.
Right.
It takes a major leap.
Yes,
it does. An identity. It's a change in the sense of self. And I'm not saying in this book, Our African Unconscious, that all of a sudden people should start saying, I'm an African. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying people need to get rid of their ethnic identity or anything like that. No, I'm talking about our deep primordial, biological, and spiritual selves are rooted here. And the more that we can be accepting of that and recognize that in each other, the less animosity there'll be. We'll see our ethnic diversity is a different and beautiful part of a great flower. But we won't say that one part of a flower is better than another flower. We'll all recognize that the stem under which the flower, on which the flower grows, the great stem, is actually our African root, our African core. And that's really a very luminous, spiritual, transcendent reality. It's primordial, and it is that which is going to eventually connect us to the stars, literally, scientifically.
Well, you remember. On a panel, Gerald said that coming back from Kenya, that he just felt kind of a change in how he thought about things.
Right.
He said he found himself thinking more like a Kenyan, you know. And I thought that was interesting because that's the same as you're talking about here about our consciousness, allowing yourself to just relax the other things, you know, the things that are resistant, and allow that, you know, allow that to come through, you know, and just what it, you know, what it can do to change your life. So I really felt that he had a change in his life just for that trip, even though it was just, you know, he was living there at the time and was writing this book, but there was a lot that he got into.
Yeah.
But I think that, you're able to sense that, you're right. I also think reading your book and talking about shared conscience, I know that when we started doing our research, my aunt used to say that there were so many mystery and just strange things that happened when she was doing our genealogy. She said some things actually sought her out. And she would say the ancestors sought her out. And she always says, when you start looking for blood, blood looks for you.
That's
right.
So there
were a lot of things that we were saying when she was, you know, looking for stuff, that it was just so weird how she got the information, you know, or how it came to her.
Well, you know, that's why I didn't say our African mind. No, I mean our consciousness, because consciousness and mind are not exactly the same. And that's why I go back to the image that I used before about the ocean. We can recognize ourselves as waves on the ocean, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And some waves are this size, and some waves are that way, some waves go this way, so on and so forth. But deep, deep down, all those waves are part of the deep current of the ocean. And I'm saying that that's the deep current of the ocean, older and deeper and wiser than we are. And if we can learn how to connect our surface wave to the deep currents, we're moving into the deeper waters of our consciousness. And those waters are the waters where our earliest science and our earliest spirituality began. And again, our earliest spirituality began observing the earth and observing the stars. And we intuitively know that somehow we're connected to those stars out there. Otherwise, we wouldn't be gazing at them. We kind of intuitively know that. And that's the mystical part of the Black origins of mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
And psychology, as the formal science of psychology, comes much, much later. The mysticism comes first, but the mysticism is a system of knowledge also. It is a system of knowledge also. And in our African unconscious, I tried to lay that out, and is organized and backed up with data and research as I could.
Okay. So what is your next project?
Not really sure yet.
Okay. I was looking at some of the books that you've already written, some of the books. In fact, I just got through ordering another one that I wanted to read, but looking at some of the other books that you're part of. So I'm like, okay. So what's the next one?
Well, I wrote Dark Light Consciousness, and that is about the spiritual dynamics of this. We've been talking about the anthropological, neurological, embryological, et cetera, scientific part and the medicine part. That Dark Light Consciousness talks about the structure of our brain, literally the structure of our brain, and how deep religious and mystical experience is translated by the brain in our various kinds of spiritual disciplines, one kind or another.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that is really a parallel book to our African unconscious. But after that, I don't know. I've got a couple of things that I'm playing around with, but nothing has totally crystallized yet, and so I have to stay open-minded, stay open-hearted, and assume and trust that something will come up.
Well, I just ordered the other book on because you have it's also available on Audible, your Dark Light Consciousness.
Yes, yes, that's that
yes.
book about yes, Dark Light Consciousness, and
yes.
that goes down a different track, but a parallel track, and I narrate that.
Okay.
And this other one, Our African Unconscious, is going to be an audio book too. Hopefully, in the next,
okay.
I've already recorded it, so hopefully, Our African
uh-huh.
Unconscious. You know, it's the kind of thing that people can, you know, put in their player as they're driving to work and listen to, because I realize all of our time is precious.
Right. I listen while I'm working. So that's my,
yeah,
you know,
thing.
I have some
yep.
books that are on Audible. Yeah. And I'll listen
yep.
to the ones on Audible. And then when I have free time, I have the other book in my hand and I can, you know, read that. I still like reading the books, but Audible
right.
is really, it's kind of a thing when we try, I do a lot of traveling sometimes. So we're like, what book are we listening to today? You know, and,
right, right.
And then
right.
listen to at work. Right. Right. So I do like that. So I'll be really looking forward to, you know, listening to that. So
yeah,
another question is, so when you, well, I was going to say another question is when you wrote this book, who were you writing it to?
I was writing it to the debt that I owe my ancestors, and also writing mm-hmm. to the future.
Okay.
Really? As strange as
yeah.
that may seem,
I
feel a primordial need to connect the past and the future during this transitory
mm-hmm.
time, because I really
mm-hmm.
deeply believe that we're living in a transitory time, a transitional time for us as a species. And many
mm-hmm.
things are happening in this unusual era of, you know, the airplane, the spaceship, human genetics. This is a very strange and interesting time to be alive. And
well, it's also
so,
interesting because when you consider, you know, being here, you know, I hadn't thought about this, but, you know, someone says, yeah, you know, I was here before they had the internet. I was like, wow. Look how
that's right.
quickly we got
exactly.
here from, you know, I mean, I remember when it started, I'm like, oh my gosh, look how quickly
that's right.
that we're, you know, here. And then the other thing is this, it's the whole thing about, you know, I don't think we're the only ones in this universe, okay?
Neither do I.
I think that we're getting so close to that.
That's right.
That, you know, a lot of us are going to see that. Before we leave it,
right.
we're going to see that
well,
next,
the internet,
you know, that next era.
Yeah. Well, the internet is really sort of an electromagnetic model for the global consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
right.
it's sort of an electromagnetic mm-hmm. expression of our global consciousness. And I'm trying to say that that global consciousness in us genetically is rooted deep down in our African unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that we can embrace
mm-hmm.
that, the more we can take the next step in the progress of our species, because I do think that's
right.
going to happen. I'm an optimist about that, and despite all the difficult stuff we're going through, we are evolving towards something that's much greater than what we presently are. I really, truly, profoundly, deeply believe that.
Well, I believe what you're saying there is true. I mean, I don't, you know, I just started, you know, kind of hanging with my kids on TikTok. So I'll go on TikTok a lot of times and I listen to the division. It's really an interesting thing because I see people on there, what you're talking about, I see people on there doing that. I see
yeah.
them learning about so many things that is part of what you're talking about the shared consciousness, and it's really interesting
yeah.
because they're of all
yes, it is.
They're all different races, and which is like wow, because you actually see them on there and you're like, oh my goodness. And also
that's right.
We're having more So I belong to a couple of groups. One group I belong to is the Asian African group, and it's interesting because it's a bunch of us that got together and said, you know, hey, I want to learn what your culture is all about. But, you know, we're in there and it's like they're discovering just how, you know, how African conscious they are, you know,
right,
along with
right.
The black people that are finding out, oh, my God, there's so much in the Asian culture, you know,
that's
so
right.
Which is very, very cool because it's and I'm also in one that's Hispanic group, and it's Latin American and blacks.
Right.
And what's so
right.
interesting is we're finding out that, oh, my God, this is just things that we didn't know, and just
that's right,
you know, yeah. So it's really, I think, like you said, that's coming together very closely right now. We're getting, you know, people are saying, well, it's got to be more than this, you know, what is this all about? And yeah, it really is. And so I mean, that's part of what our mission is. We have a magazine and the radio, but part of our mission is, and I didn't do this from the African consciousness of when we first started, I said, you know, I really, when you go to different places, and both me and my husband at the time had been in Europe, he with his career in fashion, and I was over in Ireland hanging out. And it was interesting because we were saying how we just realized how different cultures, different races, we were the same when it came to the same dreams and ideals and goals and the things that we wanted for our family and ourselves. And that's kind of how we came together and decided we want to be part of this niche. We want to show other people how much more of the same we were than being different.
Yes.
So your book is very good. I'm enjoying reading it. I'm sharing it with my other daughter. She tried to snatch it from me. I'm like, no, you can't until I finish. So I'm excited she wants to read it, though. I'm very excited she wants to read it because this is a great conversation even for us and for a lot of the people that we have, because it's a lot of confusion, and we want to be able to say, okay, let's break this open and look at it. Let's talk about it. And so
right.
I'm enjoying being able to talk about it. So is there anything else that you'd like to tell our audience before we go?
Well, I want to thank the audience for staying with us tonight and listening. I mean, I hope it's been thought-provoking and interesting and stimulated some thought, both in terms of the science and medicine behind this, but also in terms of our deeper spiritual currents, and because they are coming back together again. And it's a hopeful book, because I do believe that we as a species will find our way, and that we're here for more than making money and paying bills and getting degrees. We're here for something much more
Absolutely.
Sublime than that.
Mm, yes. Well, definitely I'm going to have such a great time sharing this, Dr. Bynum, especially to our groups and our social media. It's been a really good interview. I really appreciate you coming. I hope we can have you on our program again to talk about some of your other books, but also on what might be coming ahead and getting you back here on Vertical. But for sure, we're going to be this program is going to be live in a few days, and then it's going to also be on Vertical Life Magazine for those that are listening. If you have any questions, hey, hit me up, and I'll pass them over to Dr. Bynum, and we'll, you know, get back to you. But we appreciate every one of you. And Dr. Bynum, I just appreciate you staying up with me and talking about our African consciousness. Our conscience, and it's been great. It's been great.
I did very much appreciate the opportunity to touch so many other people's lives.
Well, you have a great one, and as I said, you know, we consider you part family now with the Vertical family.
Okay.
We won't let you get lost in the fray, because we want to know what's coming next, and we all want to be part of the. You know, we want to be part of that group that helps other people understand who we are, all of our African consciousness, and come together and do something better in this world.
Right. We are evolving towards something that is greater than each one of us individually.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, that's been our program today. We've been talking to Dr. Edward Bruce Bynum, and his book is Our African Conscience. We will be sharing that with you in our magazine and on our social media, so you can get a copy of the book and you can read it. I definitely would be passing it on to my friends. Also, don't forget that we are planning a writer's retreat in Ireland this year, May the 22nd, 26th to June the 5th. If you'd like more information on that, contact me at info@verticallifemagazine.com, and that's vertical with a K. We'll also be advertising on our social media. Everyone, have a wonderful night, and thank you for being a part of our program.
Thank you to our faithful listeners. This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, C. Steen Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalwithak.mediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh. Books that make you scream. Books that make you hope. And books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are on booksthatmakeyou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. If you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit booksthatmakeyou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.